Karabo Khaleng, literary journalist and guru, joining us live on the line now. And Karabo, I mean, for those of us that aren't as avid readers as perhaps you and I, this is really a chance, with all the time that we have on our hands, to get buried in a book.
I guess it is, but, you know, I just want to caution everyone. Good morning, Nick. I just want to caution everyone to just be careful of what you allow to go into your head and into your soul right now. So, yeah, it's a great time to read. It's a great time to catch up on movies and stuff, but everyone's obsessed with sort of apocalyptic kind of stuff. So I think, you know, just to be extra careful about what we imbibe, just in terms of, you know, the creativity that abounds, is that, you know, we try and find things that uplift us.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a difficult time to try and stay positive. And I suppose that becomes even more of a challenge if we go ahead and read far-fetched science fiction stories about a post-apocalyptic world, or perhaps reach for the Cormac McCarthy at this juncture.
Yeah, but you know what? Also, artists, because it's the nature of humankind and how we are as people, artists do tend to go to the darker sides of human life. And the book, If You Want to Make God Laugh, looks at things that make that, you know, looks at issues that tests the triumph and the resilience of the human spirit. So it also can't be helped. I think you just need to go in there with a kind of conscious mind and just be aware and mindful of where you are when you decide to read different kinds of material. And look, you know, African literature does that to us generally anyway. You know, I went through a year where I decided to just do a cleanse of any kind of writing that speaks to, you know, oppressed peoples, because I was starting to over-relate with way too much of the content. And I realized that, you know what, I still have a control over myself. And even though I may not have complete control over my own personal fate and the fate of those whom I love, you know, I still do have a little bit of control. So, you know, I think we just need to be wary of that when we read some of the things that might trigger us, where we have nowhere to go. You know, it's not that I can, you know, it's not as if I can take a walk and go meet friends for a drink after reading a very tense book to kind of debrief from it. So I think this is when you need to actually just be extra careful to connect with each other after we read stuff that kind of, you know, challenges our sensibilities and can remind us of our own traumas.
We're talking about books, our literary corner with literary journalist and guru Karabo Khaleng. Let's talk about If You Want to Make God Laugh. It's the book that we're talking about this week, that we're featuring. It's by Bianca Maree, and it tells the unique story of three women in post-apartheid South Africa.
Yes, it does. So it begins just before the 1994 election. So it's during those years where there was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of doubt, but there was also a lot of hope. But there was also a lot of violence, you know, and you think back to those days, and you sit and you look at the world and the country right now, and in those early days, you thought, okay, the Cold War is over, the liberation movements have been freed, they've been unbanned, and we're heading towards democratic elections, but there was an inordinate amount of violence in the country. So Bianca Maree sort of picks this age during this period during South Africa's history, and she brings together three protagonists, which I think is a really, really bold thing and a courageous thing to do. I mean, it's hard enough dealing with one character and allowing them to go through what you do classically as a novelist. You know, you present them with a moral challenge, you know, you bring them to a climax, and you find them some kind of redemption. And Bianca manages to do that with not one, but three women protagonists, two of whom are sisters, but whose lives take on completely different directions. And one younger woman who comes into their lives through the tragic death of her own mother and the death of her and the arrival, the birth of her son, who she conceived through corrective rape, while she was living as a teenager with her sickly mother in an informal settlement. And this book is set in Magaliesburg, which I also think is kind of refreshing. It's a different part of South Africa. It's not too far from where we are. But she locates, you know, this story unfolds on this farm called Verdriet, which is also a very interesting name for a farm, considering the fates and misfortunes, actually, the ill fate that has brought these three women together to try and resolve and to come to some semblance of just peace in their lives and forgiveness and forgiving not just the people who've harmed them, but even forgiving themselves and each other, and trying to claim some kind of responsibility and ownership over their own lives.
Any questions that you have on this book, get a dialing now on 011-883-0702. We're in conversation with Karabo Kholeng, literary journalist and guru. I mean, we try to set the scene for keeping our reading habits not necessarily light and fluffy, but not really that heavy during this this lockdown and time of stress that the nation's going through. I'm supposing that if you want to make God laugh, albeit dealing with some very, very difficult subjects like corrective rape, as you just mentioned, there is a silver lining to the story, so to speak. I mean, how did it feel you leave? How did it leave you feeling after you'd finished reading it?
Yeah, and it makes me believe in sisterhood and family, and that we can find each other even through the pain that results as through the pain that binds us. So just to set the scene a little bit clearer for everyone, we have Ruth and Delilah, who are sisters. They were raised on Verdriet Farm, which is an avocado farm in Magaliesburg. And Delilah goes on to try and make life for herself as a nun, but ends up falling pregnant also under questionable circumstances, and is excommunicated and has to give up her son as a result. So immediately after she gives birth to her son, which is what used to happen in South Africa back in the day, if you became a teenage mom, you were sent off to finishing school. Well, usually you give up your child for adoption and come back home in this cloud of shame, right? And this is what happens to Delilah. And she goes on to work in Zaire as an aid worker. And Ruth goes on to live a very glamorous life, even though it was morally questionable under the Calvinistic times of South Africa, as a stripper and exotic dancer. And she becomes this sort of, you know, lady of scandal and glamour in sort of South African kind of tabloid life. And she goes on to make her life in Cape Town. And she goes through several unsuccessful marriages, battles to have kids, but also amasses a great deal of wealth. So the sisters arrive at the farm in their late 50s together, with their lives not having worked out the way in which they had planned. And that's where the title comes in, right? It actually pays homage to an old Yeezy saying that says, man plans and God laughs. And it's also found in Proverbs, where they talk in the Bible, where they talk about how man can make his plans, but God decides the steps that you have to take, right? So Zodwa enters their lives when her mother actually takes her son from her and leaves him with these sisters on their farm. So what happened with Zodwa's mom, Leleti, was that she actually grew up on the farm as well, where her relatives were taking care of her as an orphan, and the relatives worked as the gardener and maid respectively on this farm. So she ended up being a kind of younger playmate to the two sisters while her relatives were working as the servants on this farm. And that's how their lives come back together, when the lady makes this kind of executive decision that Zodwa's son would be better off being raised by these two women who she remembers fondly from her childhood as white people that were actually kind to her and that she had a childhood with. So it's almost as if, like, this kind of story, you know, these women find healing from the pain in their respective lives, but they also find a kind of, it's almost a metaphor for how, you know, how the intimate also plays a huge part in the grand politics, and how as individuals we can actually cross those bridges of how politics can cause these ruptures in terms of how our fortunes can be shaped or misshaped by the grand politics on life, just in terms of how we can choose to be there for each other. And what happens is that the irony is that Ruth, the racist sister, actually falls in love with this little black baby and insists on adopting him, even though she finds out that he's HIV positive. So it's all that mess of South Africa in the 90s and how it's bled into our present, but how these three women manage to build bonds of sisterhood that far supersede not just the intimate violences that they experience as a result of growing up in a patriarchal society and a violent one at that, but they kind of transcend even the grand politics that sometimes feel like they work actively to keep us apart rather than bring us together.
A fascinating book there. Unfortunately, a lot of us are not going to be able to get our hands on If You Want to Make God Laugh. Certainly makes you wonder why we... didn't, like in some places in the world, like Belgium, declare that bookstores are an essential service at this time, Karabo?
Well, this book is available as an ebook because Bianca is South African, but she moved to Canada. She lives in Toronto with her husband. So she got one of those big publishers who launches the ebook at the same time as the physical one. And Exclusive Books is also selling ebooks. So if you go to any publishing house, if you're interested in any South African writer, some of them do also provide the ebook available. They'll show you how to get it via either Amazon or audio or Audible, where they've actually published the ebook alongside the hard copy book. So I'd like to encourage people not to despair. If you're able to buy a book at a bookshop and you have a debit card, you don't even need a credit card, you have a debit card, you can actually buy an ebook. They email you a special voucher, and then you're able to download the book onto your mobile device or onto your laptop, and you can carry on reading happily.
And what's your take as a literary journalist on other things like Audible, other reading platforms at this point in time, Karabo? I suppose the knee-jerk reaction from me would be embrace, embrace, embrace.
It's the same reaction for me, you know. In terms of the audiobook is really special, and it's something that's close to my heart. I have a friend who's an incredibly successful visual artist, but is chronically dyslexic. So he's one of the most well-read people I know, but he consumes all his books via audio because he can't his brain just doesn't know how to process the written word, you know, as speedily as ours is, just because of the neurological, you know, his neurological makeup. And the beauty with audiobooks as well is that you can do other things while you're reading. Right? So this is when you can get to know your garden. This is when you can start to clean out your cupboard and pack away your summer clothes. You know, this is when you can do other things, you know, do your binge cooking or your comfort cooking while listening to an audiobook. And it's also something that you can do as a family if you're doing something with your hands. So you can start craft projects, in, you know, with your household or even on your own, and do something with your hands, and that frees up your hands, right, and your eyes to absorb yourself in something else while you listen to the story. And as radio lovers, we shouldn't have an issue taking on, you know, the theater of the story through voice rather than just through, you know, looking at the words on a page or on a screen. And it actually relieves your eyes. So I think, you know, my only concern would be, like, you have to find a voice that can draw you into the story. But there's amazing actors like Thandi Newton who's been reading audiobooks that you can find on Audible. And, you know, there's different kinds of voices nowadays. Whereas, you know, when we started out with the listener's library back in the day, all you heard was, you know, very elderly gentleman sounding people reading all the audiobooks. Now you have a variety of voices, varieties of accents, varieties of vernacular that come out of the books that we're experiencing. So I think this is a time to actually open up your imagination and to start to use the internet in ways other than just sitting on social media and allowing yourself to be enveloped by panic or, you know, wasting your time scrolling down internet rabbit holes like, you know, Zit Poppers on YouTube. You know, you can listen to an audiobook.
Yo, you're giving people ideas here. They got a lot of time in their hands, you know? Zit Poppers. So, Karabo, we've spoken at length about If You Want to Make God Laugh. Sounds like a fascinating read there, available online from Bianca Marais. I'm going to put you on the spot here, though, delve into your literary knowledge. Your top five, and it can be a mix of South African and international authors that you... of books that you would read now while we're on lockdown, the ones to try and not only stretch your mind but also comfort it at this time of stress.
Oh, on the spot. Okay, I'm going back to my childhood. I want to read some of my childhood books. I'm going back to Judy Blume. I'm going back to the Ramona Quimby stories. Yes, I read Ramona Quimby when I was 10, but I want to go back there. Roald Dahl. So the things that used to cheer me up when I was a child, and especially during the periods, you know, the 80s and 90s, for me personally, we had to be under lockdown as kids. We couldn't go and play in the streets. So we didn't, you know, so we relied on books. We could go to the library every 2 weeks. So I want to go back to those books where my imagination could just fly. Definitely going back to a little bit of Bessie Head. I mentioned Roald Dahl because I do love his humor. And then I've got some to read books. And I'm trying to expatriate my reading as much as possible. So I want to delve into Eastern European and Far Eastern literature, like, you know, Japanese literature, some of the Russian classics. And then there's this book called The Bird King. It's a novel by G. Willow Wilson, which is inspired by Sufism, particularly Fariduddin Attar's Conference of the Birds. So I'm looking forward to reading that. I missed Mohale Mashiho's The Yearning, and I got myself a copy. And now is the time for me to read that as well. And, yeah, there's so much to get through. And you know what the beauty is right now, Nick, is that so many websites are offering books for free, you know. So just to go through those and really try and catch up with my classics while we wait for, you know, new books to come out later. And this is a great time, especially anything that was published more than 50 years ago is out of copyright. So I know I wouldn't be stealing from anyone if I downloaded that to read.
We've got a quick call in here from Sfiso in Ormondi. Sfiso?
Hi, Nick. Listen, so I'm listening to the topic, and I'm a bit of a lazy reader, and I must say. So the thing is, I was just listening on the conversation with audiobooks. I want to understand, is it, you know, listening to an audiobook, is it as effective as reading a book itself with regards to, I don't know, expanding your knowledge as well as just improving your reading skills and understanding skills? Is it really the same thing, or would you rather read a book than listening to an audiobook?
Karabo?
I think it depends on what your intention is with reading, right? And a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, a lot of people associate reading with sitting in a class and having to work through issues like grammar and how a sentence is constructed. And that's not what we're here for right now. So this is not like a classroom setup. I think, you know, in terms of your own personal development, the first thing that attracts us to anything in life is the story. It's the narrative. It's what we're told about it. It's our own personal beliefs about it. It's how, you know, it's our own prejudices when it comes to, you know, dealing with a new subject matter. So I think the first thing is just kind of suspend yourself in your disbelief and just listen to the first few chapters. And sometimes you have to start again. I don't always get into a book the first time I have to read it, you know. And with an audio book, like I said, you know, it captures your imagination perhaps in ways that the written word doesn't do as well, especially with English, because English sometimes tends to frighten us because of our own kind of personal and social histories with it. And I think when it's an audio book, you're listening to someone telling you a story. It's like, and the first time we came into contact with stories, it was in the home setting, right? It was our moms, our grandmothers, you know, our dads would tell us stories of their childhoods while they're teaching us a particular skill. So I think when you listen to an audio book, it's with that, but it's also the intention. So it depends on genre. You know, do you want to listen to a horror story? Do you want to listen to a business book? Do you want to listen to something about self-development? And what's nice with that, you can always pause and take down your own notes. Whereas with a book that you borrow, it's not as easy to kind of have to write lines through it. So you can always find advantages, because it's about using your senses as well in different ways, right?
Exactly. All right. Okay, no, thanks so much. Thanks for that.
Sfiso Normandy, thank you very much for that. A couple of minutes. Maybe you've got some suggestions on what we should be reading in lockdown as South Africans. Give us a call now, 011-883-0702. What is on your reading list, and how are you getting through this moment of lockdown in a literary sense? Karabo, what's your take on people that dive into complete satire? I honestly thought, you know, if I could leave and go to my mother's storage in the West Rand, I want to fish out all of my Mad magazine copies and just indulge in some escapism, because reality is super tough at this point.
I am desperate for satire. I am desperate for really hilarious stuff, you know. And sometimes maybe I think it's because I branded myself a particular way that everybody's always throwing incredibly serious stuff at me. And you know me, Nick, I'm actually not that serious. You know, I take things seriously, but as myself, I like to laugh at the world. I like to laugh at myself. I like to laugh at how absurd things are. And I think, yes, that's definitely the time to delve into satire. And also to try your own hand at things, you know. It doesn't mean you're going to win a Pulitzer or a Nobel Prize or anything. But, you know, try and write your own comic take on what's going on. You know, speak to your family members. Speak to kids and write down what they have to say about, you know, their imagination of how the world is going to turn out to be after this. But definitely look for the funnies. You know, they really do save us. That's why I'm looking forward to rereading all my Royal Dahls. I really, that's the one thing that I'm looking forward to, yeah.
Karabo, always a pleasure. My sister in literary arms, Karabo Kholeng, literary journalist. Stay safe, stay sane, and look after yourself during the lockdown.
Thanks, Nick. You too, you and everyone else.
All right, Karabo Kholeng, our guest there. Listen to books. That's if you can afford electricity. Give the poor people some attention, not the stuff that only costs money.